But it's so important in God's eyes. You know, we were talking about that passage yesterday, and no, 2 days ago, about you go to the Holy of Holies in Psalm 67, and it says, you go to the Holy of Holies, and what's there? It says, a God who's the Father to the fatherless and the defender of the widows. And that's how God's described in the Holy of Holies. And I was thinking, isn't that just a great description to kind of ties in with James 1:27. So today's Bobby's day, so I'll let him kind of lead the discussion, but we can answer questions on anything you want.
Okay, a question I have is, what did they say at the night lectureship about the widows and the orphans?
Well, you know, the one that had the one...
The widows and the orphans. Zero.
That's what I was thinking. I thought,
zero.
Because the one that had the passage of James 1 didn't really deal with that.
And I thought, isn't that odd?
Yeah, I thought that was odd, too.
And I was
kind of sitting there thinking, man, I must have just zoned out because I didn't
Yes. I thought my husband passed away over 40 years ago, and I had 3 children. Oftentimes, they don't even say just orphans. They say fatherless.
It could be.
$2 a day.
Yes,
that's it.
$2 a day.
Yes. Oh, do come in.
You can do the church across thing and sit back in the back, too.
Oh, we've been getting early to our church for 15 years to sit in the bathroom.
Totally understand.
The kids were little when it started.
Yeah.
But when it happened to me, and my, you know, there was almost no help. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what to do. And my poor children, I think, suffered as a result. So I thought, well, maybe they'll tell something at the, you know, in James 1:27 on Tuesday and on the lectureship. And then they didn't even touch on it.
So do you want to introduce CRF, or do you want me to kind of just go with it?
Well, you know, Christian Relief Fund, what we do is we do a lot of things like relief in Nepal. We're doing that. We do... Yeah, my chair is broken. Oh, here it is. That's my problem. I did it again. And so we, you know, do things like that. We drill a lot of water wells right now. But the bread and butter thing that we do is we help orphans. And we do that in about 30 countries around the world. And we found for about $1 a day, at less than $2, you can totally support one of these kids like Blanton here, Blanton Chicago. And Blanton, you know, if he gets supported, which really isn't that much, about $1 a day,
mm-hmm.
We'd furnish him an education. He'd get to go to school, get a uniform, get some clothes to wear, get food to eat, get spiritual training. Where he lives, mm-hmm. 6 days a week, he gets spiritual training.
Uh-huh.
And then we would find a place for him to live. We try to do extended family, and we find that just in the social status, if you're in an orphanage, you're kind of at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a few places we have to build orphanages. We don't have another choice, but we try to get them with a distant relative or even a church member.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll go to places like this particular place. There really wasn't a great church there to take in a lot of kids, and it was growing, it was just relevant for them. And so we planted a church there. And so a lot of places in El Dorette, where this is, in that area, we planted about 80 churches in the last 7 years. And Francis, that talked yesterday, mm-hmm. and these churches really grow because people see that you care. They'll see, hey, orphans really get helped here. Because they don't most places, especially these that are AIDS orphans.
And what country?
This one's in Kenya. We're in about we're in about around 30 countries, but these are in Kenya because Francis was here yesterday and we brought his kids.
Oh.
And so, like, we go around and we'll have these. These are all real kids. None of these kids have sponsors.
Mm.
And so. We'll just get sponsors for them, and they're kind of unique. You sponsor them, and it's not like a specific time. It's the time that they need to get from where they are when you sponsor them to high school, and they write letters to you, and you write letters to them, and mm-hmm. we send pictures out, you know, so you can see there. advancement. And what's funny is people think we switch kids on them sometimes because they'll sign up for this kid and a year later they'll get the picture. So that's not my kid, but their kid's been eating regularly good food. And so their whole appearance sometimes changes just because they're malnourished when you first start sponsoring. Like, look at this kid, how skinny he is. He is so skinny.
Well, are most of their parents, have they died? These
kids right here, most of them are what we call AIDS orphans. And the United Nations defines an AIDS orphan as anyone who's lost one parent from AIDS. And the problem, if you lose one, you'll probably lose the other. And so it means that, but the thing that you have to know about an AIDS orphan that I didn't know is that I thought AIDS orphans had AIDS. That's not what it means. Or I thought they were all HIV positive. Only about, I think about 37% of children who are born to HIV parents are HIV positive. So the majority are not. And so that's why we educate them as they're growing up. We call it the ABCD method, and we teach it in our schools, and I teach it all over Kenya now. ABCD method. A is abstinence. B is be faithful in marriage. C is condoms as a last resort. We're not saying, hey, go around and have sex with condoms, but we're saying we'd rather you wear a condom if you're going to have sex so you don't die because you had sex. And then D is death if you don't do this. And it's kind of sad because you'll go down and you'll hear this little kid here that's not that old, and he can tell you the ABCDs. And you kind of think, it's so bad that he had to learn all that kind of stuff early. But in that society, you do. And so we teach them education, and it's really working. We've reached the tipping point on AIDS. The other thing that happened, I'm doing all your talking.
That's okay, go ahead.
The other thing that is really important is when President Bush was president, he had an initiative called PEPFAR. And PEPFAR was a program to buy antiretroviral drugs for sub-Saharan Africa. And it was the largest benevolent grant in the history of the United States. And so what happens is, it's kind of like Magic Johnson's still alive, right? Okay, a lot of people think he has AIDS. You know, he's never had AIDS. He was HIV positive, and he was one of the first guys that got antiretrovirals. And so by taking those regularly, he never got AIDS. Okay, but you had to be really wealthy to be able to get those back then. Where now, because of PEPFAR, we can furnish very cheaply these antiretroviral drugs to sub-Saharan Africa. So, like, if this kid got sponsored here, Helen here, if she was HIV positive, I don't know if she is or not, but say she was, and she took those drugs regularly, she wouldn't get AIDS.
And so for the rest of your life?
You have to take them the rest of your life.
You're taking the drug.
Wow. Now, see, that's the problem, is if she quit at some point, her HIV will probably mutate. And then if she quits and then she has sex with somebody else, then she is transferring a mutated HIV that the antiretrovirals wouldn't work with. So that's why it's really important, you know, when people are running for president, that's one of the things I read on there. Are you for PEPFAR? You know, because I remember somebody was running for president last time after President Bush wasn't for it. And I said, if you're not for it and don't continue it, all these kids die. And so it's one of those things, as you start, you got to keep going. But it's revolutionized the whole situation in sub-Saharan Africa. And we got so fewer deaths among the children because they're available. You don't have to be rich like Magic Johnson to get these. And so it has changed things. And also we've learned that education has changed things. And if you tell this little kid, hey, you practice abstinence or die, that's a pretty good motivation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the United States we say, well, abstinence won't work, you know, and that kind of education. Well, it will work over there, and it's proven that it has worked.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of turning that, but we still need a cure for AIDS. And I think they'll find one, you know, hopefully in a decade or so. But until then, the antiretrovirals have changed the entire scene. And, like, we work in a place called Kisumu that when I first went there, it had the highest percentage of AIDS in the world. And is way over 50%. Just like, imagine, every other person you shake hands with had AIDS.
Oh.
And we distribute antiretrovirals there. At the time, we were the only one, and Bobby just got back there and said there's other people that are doing it now, too, in the government. But at the time we started, we were the only kind of show in town that was dealing with that AIDS issue. I don't know if that answered your question. I forgot the question.
So Milton's our president and has been the president of CRF for
six.
So. And has really been a blessing to Christian Relief Fund. Then a few years back, I was running an organization called Bread for a Hungry World, which we were doing a very similar thing, but we were partnered with, we were kind of based out of a church, and as we started to grow, once I put an ad in the Christian Chronicle, and then I looked three pages later, and there was a Christian Relief Fund ad that almost were identical. You know, we were saying the same thing. And so Milton and I talked a little bit. And so we decided, hey, let's do more. You know, instead of us both putting ads in a paper, let's, you know, work together. And that's that much more money we can put to the ground. And so Milton and I both have a heart for helping those children grow. And so it's been a good merger for us. So Milton does... goes to a lot of our places around the world, but I kind of manage the operations side of the different organizations. If there's something that needs to kind of be tweaked or worked on, I'll go and work with our leaders there and help train them. And Milton handles, you know, a lot of our donor contacts here in the United States. So it's been a great relationship from the two organizations, and we've been partnered together now, 2 years, I think, a little right at 2 years. And so as we continue to grow, we were both of our works were kind of in the same area, you know, and so we kind of just merged those as well. And so it's been good. And what's great about it is sometimes Milton and I will come at things, problems, different ways. And so we'll be able to see it from another person's perspective. As a matter of fact, just recently I was dealing with an issue that he was talking about over in Kisumu. I went over to work on a little issue we were having, and he was like, well, so did you get it fixed? And I said, yeah, but I gave him about 3 or 4 months, you know, time to get it fixed. And he goes, well, why didn't you stop it sooner? And I was like, well, because I was trying to be like you. I was trying to give him grace. And normally, I said, my normal reaction would have been, let's fix it right now. But I was trying to give him grace.
We changed roles.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was funny. We were laughing about how that is. And so today, you know, I want to kind of, yesterday you got to hear Francis, and you two are new with us today, but my vision a lot of times when I speak at places like this is I want to hear from you. I want to hear from you and hear what you would like to walk away from the class. So what would be a goal that you would, when you saw this and said, I'm going to go check this class out, what was kind of the goal you had there? And then hopefully, with what I talk about, we'll address it. And if it doesn't, then I'll get to address it, kind of what you're thinking about. So you were here yesterday. We'll let you lead us. And just kind of a goal of what brought you to this class.
You know, just a love for orphans and that. I have always wanted to sponsor a child. And so really that, I just have not... There hasn't been a financial way that we could do it, and I am starting work in a couple of weeks, and so I've already spoken to my husband about doing this after yesterday's class, and more or less just wanting to find an area. There's so many, you know, there's so many needs, and just, like I said, I just had a heart for it for a very long time, so I just really wanted the information, and you know, what you said yesterday about 92% of the money's going to these children is just, that was about all I needed to make that decision.
Okay. Great. We'll give you a little more at the beginning. I'll give you a little more in depth of how our program works, and so you'll get to see that. And ma'am, tell me your name again.
I'm Audrey Travis.
Audrey.
And this verse is very close to my heart.
Right.
And so I just wanted to find out more of what people are doing with this verse.
Very nice. Okay, perfect. We'll address that.
Oh, and we've sponsored someone through the ABC program.
Do you know
that? That was something out of Guatemala.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, our church is using Compassion International, and you know, you always, you just get really quick information when you, you know, seat at a church. It's like a 5-minute something. Mm-hmm. So I just thought I'd hear more.
Sure. Okay.
So you sponsor a kid with ABC, you say?
We did, but they got to, they aged out.
Okay, yeah, so you went the whole way.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're similar to Compassion International. We're rooted in the Churches of Christ, and Compassion is bigger than us, and we get a little bit higher percentage of our money to the field than Compassion does. We get the 92, they get 80, and 80's still good. That's just the thing that when I started doing CRF, it's just that I was just flabbergasted that they operate off of such a small administrative fee, and we try our best, you know.
Where are your offices?
We're in Amarillo and Fort Worth. I'm in Amarillo and he's in Fort Worth. And Red was headquartered in Fort Worth and CRF in Amarillo. We've kind of kept both offices because since he travels so much around the world, it's just easier for him to get out of Dallas and Amarillo.
It's one extra flight. So, well, let me tell you a little bit about how CRF, how we work. A lot of times we get people, as a matter of fact, just a couple of days ago, we had a lady we were talking with who was wanting to find out, how do I get kids sponsored, you know, from a program she had in Africa? And she was like, how do I get them in? And so basically CRF works off of a model, the Luke 2:52 verse. So we all know that verse. Jesus grew in wisdom. Jesus grew in stature. Jesus grew in favor with both God and man. And so basically what we do at CRF is we try to plan and work with programs on the ground that have natives leading the program. We think it's so important to use the native leaders because several reasons. One, they know their country better than we know their country. And what happens a lot of times is we go in, North Americans do, organizations go in and want to fix or correct or say this is how it should work. And we take a Western mindset into cultures that aren't Western mindsets. As a matter of fact, Francis, who spoke yesterday, he's from Kenya. So Francis, yesterday I asked him, I said, how are you getting back to the airport? And he said, I'm just going to find a ride. Hadn't thought about it, hadn't even planned about it. I said, well, Francis, because he said, I'm going to come to your class. And I said, what time do you fly out? And he said, I fly out at 3:30. And I go, you're not coming to my class. And so I said, how are you getting to the airport? And he goes, I don't know. I'll find a ride. And I go, well, let's figure it out. So we got him the shuttle. And so the shuttle said, I'm going to pick you up at 12:10. Well, we're sitting down in the Christian Relief Fund lunch, and it was 12:05, and I said, Francis, we need to go. And he goes, well, it's just 12:05, and they're not going to be here till 12:10. And I said, well, we got to walk, pick up your luggage, and get, you know, to the spot. And so the mindset, Francis always laughs at me because he goes, you North Americans, the watch controls you, but in Kenya, we control the time. And so, when you take a North American mindset into a place, they do things totally different. You can come in very offensive, and it ends up hurting. So by having a native leader that you can trust, they know how their culture works much better than we do. It also is very important for us to listen to them and learn. And there's been several times where, which I just learned this over the past few months that I've been in Kenya, but asking questions is very accusatory. So asking a question is making an accusation against them. And so whenever I go in, just like North Americans, we go in and we want to information gather so that we can kind of work on the problem. Well, they think you're accusing them of doing something wrong. And so it was very it was a very good lesson for me, because Francis, we were actually at a restaurant, and I was talking to the waiter and said, well, you don't have this dish, we're just going to go somewhere else. I thought, I mean, we would say that if, you know, if we were wanting a certain dish, we were wanting fish, but, you know, you don't have it, so we're just going to go to the next restaurant. Sorry to bother you. And he was like, you North Americans, you're so direct. We Kenyans, we would walk around the block, and we would not be offensive like that to just tell them. And I was like, it was just saying you don't have what we want. And so it helped me understand how Kenyans relate to one another. And so by learning to work with natives from the country, what happens is they're able to communicate with the children better, much better. And so we don't try to send North Americans over. And also, a lot of times when we send North Americans over, the program becomes much more expensive, because North Americans are much more expensive to live there. They want to carry kind of their North American lifestyle into that culture. And so we really try to work with natives. So when you take that Luke 2:52 model, we sit down with the native leaders and we say, the first thing we want to do is Jesus grew in wisdom. So we want these children to get an education. So as you look at these kids, the thing about it is we want them to be educated. Because the way you're going to break the cycle of poverty is not with the parents. You know, and a lot of these kids are orphans and they're living with grandmothers. And so you're not going to change the way a grandmother or an aunt treats this child and has them, because that's how they've grown up. And most of them have grown up to about fourth or fifth grade, sometimes sixth grade. And then they get big enough to either go get sticks for firewood. They have to walk 3 or 4 miles to get water and to pull the water out and bring the water in. And so they're taken out of school. And so one of the things we try to teach is we say, it's very important for your child to be educated. We're going to help your child get an education. And so that's where, you know, that $35 a month, part of that money is making sure that child gets that education. Now, we all know that without proper nutrition, a kid that sits in a classroom is going to fall asleep, or he's not going to do his homework, and he's not going to be able to do that real well if he's not properly, you know, doesn't have the proper nutrition. And so the second thing is it talks about Jesus grew in stature. And so he grew in, you know, his body. And so one of the key components is making sure the children are able to have a good meal. So that means they come to some of the schools and they'll get a meal in the morning and a meal at lunch. And then right before they'll leave, they get one more meal as well. You know, some of the other schools, some of our other programs, how are you? Come on in. And some of the other programs, what they do is we're able to help them through school, but then we're also give them a food to kind of help the family make it home, because some of the families, you know, they do still live with some of the families, especially in our Central American countries as well. And so that's the nutrition side. Then it talks about growing with favor. Come on in. You're okay. It's very relaxed, very laid back. So the third thing that we do, I'll go back over just real quick. We use the model of Luke 2:52 as our verse that we use, and it talks about Jesus grew in wisdom, Jesus grew in stature, Jesus grew in favor with both God and man. And so the four things, the four pillars that we work with are education for the child, nutrition for the child, and now we're talking about growing in favor with God. And so all of these locations, I mean, there's a lot of great organizations that do livelihood programs, you know, giving families chickens, goats, pigs. There's one that's called Heifer International. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but Heifer is huge. And it's actually out of, their office is out of Little Rock, Arkansas. And they started as a Christian-based organization, but as they've grown, you know, they started taking some different types of money and those types of things. And so they kind of moved away from their principles of Christian principles. And they still have good values, but they haven't stuck to that. And so, you know, you hear Christian Relief Fund. It's one of our values. I mean, it's a core value that we believe in it so much that it's in our name. And so growing in favor with God is very important, because growing in favor with God is where we want every child to be educated in order to make a difference in the world. You heard Francis yesterday tell a story of a kid named Milton, which just like this Milton's name, and he was kind of an older kid, right? And so the kid had grown up and had never been sponsored, and Milton was like, well, he's got my name, I got to sponsor him. So Milton sponsored him. Well, this kid ended up going kind of to a technical school, learned how to do automotive type stuff, but then was also getting Christian education on the side. And so what happened is now he's working on vehicles, able to evangelize. When he's working on the vehicle, he's sharing the gospel with the people that are around him. And so it's very important that these children understand where their hope comes from. You know, when Milton shows up, or I show up, or anybody wearing a CRF orange T-shirt show up from the U.S., we don't want them to think you're the answer. You know, we want them to realize, hey, we're representing God. You know, we're just His servant, and this is coming from the Lord. And so, the Christian value and the Christian principle is, you know, very much a core foundation for us, and it's one of those buckets that we make sure that we address with any program we work with. And so as we were talking about working with the local, the native leader in the country, the thing about it is we partner with people that have a connection to the church. So a lot of times there are preachers in the local church that we've met through something like this. I mean, we get emails all the time asking, can you help us? And, you know, like I told the lady the other day, we weren't able to help her at that moment because we've got so many kids on our waiting list right now that we're trying to get taken care of. But what happens there is now we've had a relationship, right? We've built a relationship. So, you know, if we see her again in a couple of years and we're at a place where we're able to grow into that country, we can have that conversation because now we've visited with her. We have we know some similar people. And so that's kind of how we find organizations. You know, people ask, how do you find the people on the ground? And honestly, we all know the baseline is we want them to have a Christian faith. The second thing is this somebody I can trust? Because I'm going to have to send, you know, this money per child, every dollar down to the ground. And I need to be able to know I can count on this person to be, you know, be fiscally responsible with those dollars. Because our goal is to help those kids. It's to help those kids grow, you know, physically. It's to help those kids grow mentally. And it's to help those kids grow spiritually. And so that's what we're after. And as we meet that. The fourth pillar that we work on, and we'll kind of dig into a couple of, I think this class lets out at 2:15, so we'll talk about a couple of things, and then I'll open it up to some questions. But so the last pillar is growing in favor with man, and so here's what we want to see happen with these students as they go and get educated, then they go out into the workforce. They're able to make an impact into their community. So they're able to give back. They're able to be a player, a person that's making a difference in their society. And so they can be group leaders at their church. They can introduce people at the bank where they're working to the gospel. So they have the opportunity when they're teaching in a children's, you know, in a school, they're able to introduce the gospel there as well to those children and to the families that they're now teaching. And so what happens in that role is that place right there is able to really impact. It sends them out, right? They become the senders. This morning in a class I was helping teach, I asked Francis a question, and Francis, I hadn't heard this yet, but Francis said they've got 30 of their students in Kenya right now in college. And he's already met with every one of those kids. And he's told them, when you graduate college and you go and get a job, you've got to come back here and sponsor one of these kids. And so he's making them, giving them he's teaching them already to give back.
And so right there, he's going to grow his kids that can be sponsored by 30. And so what they do, and we all know this. You know, it's much. We get more happiness out of giving. I mean, when you do something for someone else, the joy that you get. It's actually, I spoke to a group of counselors, high school counselors or school counselors, about 2 months back. And so some of the research I was doing on it, it said that the act of giving is as addictive, and it uses the same type places as any type of addiction to a drug. So it's the same type. Your brain releases the same type of whatever endorphins or you know whatever they release up there. It releases the same type thing as those that have drug addictions, and so it is addictive, and it is something that you want to go and be a part of. And so growing in favor with man can look a lot of different ways. In Kenya, we do some Boy Scouts. In some of our Central American countries, we have soccer teams. Haiti's got a band, right?
Yeah, they've got a marching band.
So they've got a marching band.
You mean you have kids that are in the Boy Scouts? Or kids that are, do you have girls?
Yes.
They have Girl Scouts. Yeah. In fact, our Girl Scouts in Kenya won the national competition last year.
And so basically we use that in several different ways. Also, other ways that we do that is by providing kids and families goats or chickens or pigs to raise. And so what that does is that helps them learn how to take care of something. It gives them the ability to learn how to take care of another life, but it also allows them to help their family. So if a kid receives a pig, right, and they start raising that pig, they're able to sell that pig in order to help the family. And so it gives them self-worth. Well, one of the things that we want to be an offspring, and in any organization that you work with internationally or nationally, you want to make sure the people that you're working with, you're building up their self-worth and not destroying it. And that came clear as day for me one time when I was working in Saltillo, Mexico. And we were there, and I mean, it was one of those things where I was leaving, and the children's minister said, "I've got all these VBS t-shirts, could you take them down and pass them out?" And I said, "Absolutely, yeah, let's do it." So we loaded them into our truck, and we took off down to Mexico, and we got out there, and I mean, the people just came from around, and I'm not exaggerating, there were 200 people standing around this little white truck we were in. And we start handing out these 2X yellow t-shirts. And these tiny 5-foot mothers are jumping, trying to grab one of these t-shirts that's 2X that they're not going to be able to fit themselves. They're not going to be able to fit their kids in. And, you know, what happens is North Americans, we go and we drive away and we feel like, look what we did. We helped, and we high-five each other. And, I mean, I got in that truck, and I put my head down, and I just shook my head. And I was like, we made those ladies look like dogs that were jumping for scraps. I said, that's the most embarrassing thing I've ever been a part of in my life. I felt horrible. I devalued those ladies. I gave them no value at all. So the next time that youth minister or the children's minister said, "Hey, we've got all these t-shirts and we've got all these clothes that we want to take down," I said, "You know what? I'll take them because I've got the room, but I'm going to do something totally different." And so what we did is we set up in the store, we set up this place where the ladies would get basically fake cash. And they could come in dignified, walk in, find what they needed. They could look and see what size shoe they needed. They were able to pick up the shoes. They were able to pick up the shirts. And so it gave them value. It didn't devalue them. It gave them a pride and a sense of ability to make an impact for them to change the life of their children. And so, one of the key things, components that we have to do is to give value to people that we work with. We've got to trust them and their knowledge base to understand how they are making an impact and how we can help them. And so that's kind of one of those things that we were in the process of doing, is always giving the value to the people that we're working with. When you look at doing a program, the thing that you want to make sure you're doing is listening to the local leaders, listening to the local parents, to the families, to see how you can make an impact. So in Honduras one time, we were talking, and they wanted to do microloans. And so we got some money to give them some microloans, and we started with 10 ladies. So we gave 10 ladies these loans, and they started paying them back. Well, one lady's business went under. It just didn't work. And so we're in this meeting, and one lady stands up, and she says, she's over here, and she stands up, and she tells the story, and she says, you know what? For years, I've been having to beg. I had to literally beg on the street for money to give, to be able to buy medicine for my kid. She said, I just had to beg for it. And she said, now with this loan and with this business I was able to start, I don't have to beg anymore. And so she's able to give back to her family that way. Well, we come on around, another lady starts telling her story, and she says, my business didn't work. And I was like, you know, there was part of me that was ready to just jump up and say, don't worry about it, don't worry about it. And instead, the person that was kind of leading the group, you know, just kind of tapped me on the arm, because they knew where I was going, because I just wanted to, you know, give it back, and tap me on the arm and said, and she, the lady said, I'm going to wash extra clothes, and I'm gonna pay this loan back because I want a second loan, and I know I can make it happen. Mm-hmm. And you know what? She did, and she's gotten that second loan, and now she's able to take care of herself. And if I would have devalued her, if I would have just said, no, I'm going to take care of that, I'm going to fix your problem, I would have come in with a Superman complex of saying, let me fix this for you. Instead, she figured out a way that she could make it work, and she was able to give back. The girl, the young lady that runs our micro-lending program in Honduras, she was found under a tree when she was about 7 years old, her and her four siblings, and they were like the first kids in the orphanage that we had there in Honduras, in Campamento. And she grew up through a program just like this, you know, just somebody sponsored her all the way through college. She got her banking degree, and she was working at the bank. And when I started this micro-lending program, I called her and I said, would you be willing to help us? And so now here's a kid that was a kid just like that right there that was sitting there, and now she's managing a program where she's helping families. And I think she's done, you know, over like 120 loans to families and to help them make a difference and an impact in their life. There was when I was in Kenya two times ago, I just pull into the school. First time I'd ever been there. And I mean, I pull into the school, and I get out of the car, and this little girl just comes running up to me and just puts her hand straight up into my hand. And I'm walking with her, and she's just walking with me, and I'm going, you have no clue who I am. No clue at all, but you feel safe. And so we're walking, and, you know, she has snot running down her nose. I mean, she's just, and I'm cleaning her up, and I'm like, come on, sweetie. And so we start walking up the stairs because the director's wanting to show me the school and take me around. And he turns around and he says, no, you stay here, you know, telling the little girl, you know, you stay back. And I said, you know what, this is why I'm here. You know, I mean, I want to see your school. I want to sit in your meetings. I want to be a part of that. But I said, this is why I'm here, is this little girl. I said, it's okay. If she wants to come and sit with me in the meeting, I can pay attention in the meeting, and you know, she'll be fine. And so she stayed with me the entire day, you know, while we're walking around. Well, about 2 days later, I'm at a different school. And I'm kind of one of those guys that just can't sit still. You know, I mean, it's like I can stay in one place for a few minutes, and then I'm like, let's go see what's outside. You know, let's go check it out. So I said, I want to see what this area that we're in. We were in, what's the name of the slum there? Kisumu?
Yolinda.
Yolinda slum. I mean, it's second largest slum in Kenya. And so I wanted to go and be, you know, in with the people in the slum. And so we're walking around through there. And as I come back in, I mean, the yard was full of people when I left. I mean, so, you know, I was like, hey, I'll be right back. I'm just going to go walk around. And so I went out, and I didn't go far. I just went a street or two. And then I came back, and there was this little boy. And as I'm walking into the gate, first thing he does, puts his hand up, grabs my hand. And I start walking into the school grounds, and he's right there with me. And I'm going, are you supposed to be in here? And so as we walk in, we're in the middle of the grounds, and 5 minutes ago, everybody was outside. I walk in there, there's nobody. I mean, I can't find anybody. There's nobody walking around. All the kids are back in school, and so teachers and everybody are all in offices, and I'm like, you know, I look at the security guard, and I'm like, is this okay? I don't know. You know, is this kid okay in here? And finally, somebody comes out of the teacher's classroom and goes, oh, I see you've met Obama. And I lose it. You know, I start laughing. So I grab out my phone, and I'm taking selfies with Obama. And, you know, I'm sending pictures on Facebook and Twitter and all of that. And so, you know, and here's this kid. And I'm telling you, he was six years old. And he was no bigger than a 2.5-year-old because of malnutrition. I mean, and I'm not kidding on the 2.5-year-old, because the people that, there's a North American couple that lives there that kind of works in that area, and they happened to be there that day. And I told their little daughter, I said, come stand by Obama, same size. And she was 2.5. And I took a picture, and I was like, I cannot believe this. And so here's this little kid that, you know, was doing, just living, just hanging outside the gate. The only difference between him and the girl that held my hand 2 days before was that somebody sponsored her. That was it. It was that somebody said in the United States, hey, I'm going to make an impact in this kid's life. And so she was able to be inside the gate, and this kid was outside the gate.
How much is it to sponsor a child?
It's $35 a month. And so, you know, the impact that $2 a day makes, or less than $2 a day makes, a little over a dollar a day, it does work. And, you know, I work there, okay? So that's part of my job. But I'm just telling you, if I didn't work there, I would stand up and say, this is a good organization that's making an impact and changing kids' lives. And so what I want you to kind of take away from this is there's a lot of great organizations that do great things. And my challenge to you is make sure they're using locals. Make sure they're impacting the kids' lives. Make sure they're giving Christian values. And so those are the types of things that are important, impactful type things that CRF is doing around the world. So our time is up. I'll you can go ahead and come turn us off if you want. I'm